Get ready to awaken,
transform, and thrive.
You're listening to The Soul, Science, and Psychology of Optimal Well-Being, hosted by longevity doctor, meditation teacher, and sex educator, Dr. Andrea Pennington.
Hey there, welcome. Today, I'm offering you a unique opportunity to go behind the theories and superstitions for a deep exploration of what's really driving or hindering your success. Now, this understanding is going to give you the basis to raise your game across the board in any field. And best of all, it will highlight the simplicity of that wonderful feeling of happiness and satisfaction and well-being that we're all really looking for, and tie that to performance. In short, performance in your business and satisfaction in your life has never looked so good. Joining me today is Anders Haglund. He is a transformative success coach who has worked with some top CEOs and some top elite Olympic athletes. And now he's going to give us some insights on how to take your life to that next level. Anders believes that one genuine insight is all you need to take both your success and your experience of life to a whole new level. Anders teaches that you're living in the experience of your thinking and not the experience of your circumstances. You have to understand better to do better, and you're never more than a thought away from your innate well-being and wisdom. So join me in welcoming Anders Haglund. Thank you for being here.
Well, it's wonderful to connect with you. To help you, I don't know, maybe go within and dig a little deeper to see how can you bring even more of you to the world? How can you maybe raise your game, tap into that innate potential that you always hear me talking about? Well, today I have a very special conversation to share with you, and it is with Anders Haglund. He is a peak performance coach, but I mean like to the nth degree. As you'll probably see in the show notes, Anders has been coaching really, really high performance athletes, you know, elite Olympic style athletes and CEOs and these multimillionaires and billionaires around the world who, you know, when everything's really on the line, they have to dig deep, which means they're tapping into their potential. But they've also got to get past any of the junk that's going on in their minds, whether it's fear or doubt or insecurity or whatever. And Anders, I just want to say, first and foremost, thank you for joining us and Happy New Year.
Oh, thank you for having me, and Happy New Year yourself.
Well, it's always fun talking to you. My viewers and listeners know that I'm kind of a science nerd, and I geek out over neuroscience and quantum physics, and you do too.
Yeah.
But most importantly, it's about how do we take all this beauty from science and bring it into the art of living and living at our best and really taking our lives to that next level. So one of the things that I want to talk to you about that I've been really sensitive to for 2017 is this concept that we are all being challenged, whether on a political and national scale. I'm an American with a new president, and, you know, love him or hate him, it doesn't even matter what your political affiliation is. We are all Americans are now being called to really dig deep and find out our own values and put our values into action. And whether that's on a national scale or just in our personal lives, we have an opportunity now to dig deep and try to bring the best of us forward, whether it's just affecting our personal life, our businesses, or maybe even our community and our nation. And so I know that you have done a lot of in-depth thinking yourself through personal challenges and life transitions, as well as the political scene. So I'd like to just start there. What do you think are the biggest insights that you could share with us about this time of what I'm calling, you know, increased accountability and responsibility for us to be the change that we want to be, that we want to see in the world?
Yeah, it would be wonderful if we were all Gandhi, right?
Yeah.
But here's something that I think is interesting when we look at that. And I was doing a seminar up in Oslo, and one of Denmark's most famous business people were in the audience, and he brought his whole staff because he heard that it would be good. And he also had, for the year, he had a Danish TV crew following him around because they were making a special on him. And it was interesting because he was asking me about the differences and how come I'm so brilliant sometimes and how come I'm not so brilliant other times, right?
Yeah.
And I said, well, honestly, if we could ask the TV crew to put some monitor on your brain where we could see when your brain activity got a little bit overexcited, when you could feel your thinking speed up. And if we asked anybody in the world when their thinking speeds up, what happens to their mood, they would say, well, it goes down. And when your mood goes down, everything looks a bit worse, right? And he says, okay. So I said, well, if we did that and we connected to the camera, so when they followed you around, the only time that it would actually record would be when that happened. And as soon as it kind of slowed down up here, it would just cut, right? And then you would put that together as the movie and put it on TV. How would you be portrayed, right? And he said, well, to be honest, that's what I'm afraid what they're going to be doing anyway, because right? It might be good TV. But he said, I probably wouldn't look that good. I said, no, you probably like everybody else. Everybody would say like, wow, why do they even let him out? I mean, he treats his employees unfairly. He shouts at his kids. But if we switched that thing, so it would be the other way around and said, anytime that it slows down a little bit, it goes record. And every time it starts speeding up, it's cut. And we put that on TV, what would happen? And he said, I'd probably look pretty good. I said, yeah, everybody would be like, it can't be that perfect. I mean, he treats every challenge, you know, problems are just challenges. And he's nice, even though his employees has made mistakes. I said, would that be fair to say that that's what we are all facing? And that's why through history, there's been this thing about the devil and the angel on your shoulders. And that we all have that. And he said, yeah, that would be fair. And I said, where is it coming from? And so what do you mean? Well, the one problem we have here is that we think, and I think it's because of our history from church and state, where we've always been afraid of human nature. So we think that the devil is our default, so to speak, that when somebody says something mean or condescending or behaves badly and, you know, acts out, that's when we think, oh, here comes the truth. That's what they are like deep down inside. Right? So they would say that the bad tape is the truth and the good tape is you putting on your disciplinary act, so to speak, right? And what I'm saying is that it's the other way around. That when a person is in a good mood, when they're in mental clarity and balance, that the way you are then is the true you. And the way you are when things speed up between your ears and your mood drops like a rock and you do bad things, right? That's just temporary insanity. But starting to recognize that that's what's going on, it gives us a different feel for it, because we talk about values, for example, and the problem is that we all know what good values are. I'd say that most of us know what the good values are, and we know what the bad ones are, and still we sometimes follow the bad ones and sometimes follow the good ones, yeah. Most of us, right? And it's because we think that if we change our values, we will also change as people. But the truth is that a person who is in mental clarity follows good values without knowing what they are. And a person who is upset, that is, I'm having a lot of thinking and I'm taking it really seriously because I have a bad feeling or an uncomfortable feeling in my body, which I'm innocently think comes from somewhere on the outside rather than that it's coming from my thinking, then I'm going to act out and not behave so good, right? So it's about understanding what's going on rather than knowing what I want. And there's a big difference because we know a lot of things.
Right.
One of my favorite examples when it comes to health is the fact that anybody who's overweight knows what the problem is. Mm-hmm. I should be eating better, I should be eating less, and I should be moving more. Now, so if I eat better, eat less, and I move more, the problem will be over. Now, I don't think you will find any overweight person who doesn't know that. But they have this innocent mistake, so they feel like, I don't have the discipline, I don't have the motivation, it seems like I'm stupid, what's hard about stopping your right hand from going to your mouth? What's hard about taking a walk instead of dropping down in front of the TV? I mean, I know all this stuff, but still I do it. And they have this innocent misunderstanding, I would call it, because once upon a time when they were anxious or had uncomfortable feelings, they went to the fridge and ate something and they felt better. I mean, that's a biological thing that you fill your stomach, you get a signal up to your brain saying you did well, you're going to survive, which is a release of dopamine, which makes you feel a little bit better. Now, the innocent misunderstanding is that you think, oh, I now have a tool whereby I can manage my anxiety, stress, and uncomfortable feelings. But I don't know that's what I'm doing. So anytime I'm in mental clarity or I'm in balance, I can swear up and down that I will never eat chips again. I will never have any more candies. What about chocolate? Why would I ever eat chocolate, right? And then as soon as I have those bad feelings, the fridge is going to call on me like the sirens in the Odyssey, right? It's going to feel like I'm dragged there on a conveyor belt, like in the movies. I'm just going, whoa, and I just stuff my face again. And then I feel unintelligent. But it's not that I'm unintelligent. It's that I don't understand that I have a psychological misunderstanding, whereas I think I have a bad value or not enough discipline or whatever else there is, but it's actually a misinterpretation of what's going on in my body, where I think uncomfortable feelings tell me that I need to do something to get rid of them, rather than see that they will self-correct because they're coming from a temporary thought storm in my head. And that makes all the difference in the world, because then you don't have to go through with it. And that is true now if we look at the political arena, of course. I mean, you can see a lot of people having thought storms about Donald Trump. He's pretty good at eliciting thought storms, mostly because he doesn't care about rules. You know, we have these unspoken rules where you're supposed to tell the truth. Oh, phone calling. Where you're supposed to tell the truth. You're also supposed to then acknowledge when somebody points out that you're not, you know, keeping to the facts. You're not supposed to have somebody walk out and say, well, he was talking to alternative facts. There are no alternative facts. What are you talking about? Facts are facts, right? But so that kind of gets a lot of thinking on both sides. One side where they go, I don't really care what he's doing as long as he gets things done. I need a job and I need America to do well again. And the rest of the world is a bit worried. And we don't see that we're reacting to our thinking rather than to Donald, right? Because if it's Donald, we have to fix Donald.
Connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/Dr. Andrea Pennington.
So the whole concept is becoming aware that when those feelings in our body or the change in our breathing rate, whatever that change is, recognizing that the body is giving you a signal and the signal is to evaluate your thinking. So by becoming aware that the thinking is the problem, is that what I'm hearing?
It's probably what you're hearing, but not what I'm saying.
Okay.
So here's what I'm saying, because if you take this in and you evaluate it, evaluation takes more thinking. So the old idea about getting a better life would be saying that I evaluated this badly, So let me evaluate it in a good way and I'll have a better life. Which is true. If you can evaluate things better, you'll do better. But you won't be having a wonderful experience because evaluations takes thinking. And what I'm saying is it's not what you think. It's not even how you think. It's that you think.
It's recognizing that you think.
Understand what's going on.
Yeah, yeah.
So, for example, everybody who's ever had cold feet in a relationship will notice that that will always enter when you have a big decision to make. For example, needing to, move in together or starting a family or getting married, right? When you have these things. So why you get it? Why are you even entertaining the thinking of moving in together, having children and getting married? Because you have strong, good feelings for this person.
Right.
But then, of course, when you get to that point where you go like, I'm going to walk down the aisle or let's have unprotected sex or whatever the decision is, then all of a sudden it might not feel so good anymore. And we think that we have discovered something that says something about the relationship or the other person, rather than the fact that what we've done is that we've taken our thinking and done an evaluation. We do an inventory. We go like, let me just check that I'm not making a bad decision. So you go, okay, good in bed, but a bit sloppy and leaving clothes around. We have common interest. That is good. Don't quite like my mother-in-law. Not so good. And then you go down the list, right?
Right.
While you're doing that evaluation, you're putting thinking on your mind, which most people think is reality. And as soon as you misinterpret it for reality, you have a warning signal of uncomfortable feelings. Just like when you burn yourself, you get a pain signal to tell yourself to remove the hand, not to go further into the heat, right? Same thing inside your mind is that it's just saying that, hey, while you're doing this evaluation, your feeling is going to go through the floor. Now, if you think that has anything to do with if it's a yes or no to go down the aisle, you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
Because it has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with the fact that anytime you do that kind of evaluation, you are jamming your head with thinking that it's real rather than you are making facts up and backing them up and seeing which side you're going to make win, right? So it's not about judging yourself good or judging yourself bad. It's seeing that it's the judging that's the problem.
Right. And I get that. I mean, we are meaning makers. We are natural storytellers. We're always going to be doing these things in our minds. The awareness that I was talking about is by becoming aware that it's our thinking, it's our perception, even if that's an unconscious perception yeah. that's giving rise to these feelings. My next question is, taking the relationship concept that yeah. you've just given, okay, we're sitting here with this very real world decision. Do I continue this relationship and walk down the aisle? If you're saying just becoming aware that it's my thinking, you know, I'm a thinker, yeah. I'm a storyteller, yeah. I'm a meaning maker.
Yeah.
Still, the question that people are going to fire back is, yeah, but how do I decide whether I should walk down that aisle or not?
Yeah.
Or in business, how do I take these feelings and still make a keen business decision to hire this person or fire this person or make this investment?
Yeah.
So let's make it practical.
Yes. I'll see if I can make that practical with a story. I coached a CEO who had a rather big company. They had like 3,000 employees. And after 6 months, I just wanted to do that little inventory and see how we were doing. So I said, what is your most practical insight so far from our coaching? And he said, I've never really thought about it. I mean, I feel more in love with my wife. I like my life better and I'm doing better in my career, but I haven't really thought about it as insights. I said, well, you know, insights are just things you understand now that make something easier. And they play out easier. You don't have to work at it. It's just now that you understand that Earth is round, you don't do what you thought you did when Earth was flat. And sat there with it for a while and said, yeah, I got one. I said, okay, what is it? And he said, well, after these 6 months, I think the most important thing that I realized is that I've never made a good decision. And when he said that, I thought, that's what you get from 6 months of success coaching. You have 3,000 employees and it's pretty important, right? So I got in my own head.
Yeah.
But as soon as I had that feeling coming, I immediately realized it's not coming from that, right? I have thinking about being a good coach and what it should mean. So I just sipped it rather than jumping in, right? And if you would have given me 100 guesses of what's going to come out of his mouth after that, I wouldn't have guessed it. Because the very next words out of his mouth was, because my very best decisions. It's like, you got that you've never made a good decision because your very best decisions. So that was curious, right? And he said, because my very best decisions have never felt like decisions at all. Mm-hmm. So what I've learned here is that as soon as it starts looking like a decision, that's not a time to make a decision. Because that means I'm in my head going four against. And in that mode, I don't see clearly. I have too much in the way of my own wisdom. And he said, all my best decisions were like, and he made this comparison. He said, it's actually about France, because he said they were thinking about moving into France and they've been discussing it for a long time. And all of a sudden, his CFO and somebody else came in and said, what about France? And he said, well, why don't you bring him and fly down to Paris and have a meeting? And they walked out and then his head started going like, what the hell did I just say, right? He said that was the best decision ever. That was the right timing. It was everything. And then because he has such a big company, then he has to have a press conference about the decision, right? And then he said, I have to make up the intellectual properties that made that decision look good.
Yeah.
But all my best decisions are like that. It's almost like you will never have a good relationship by saying, okay, they're the right height. I like their butt. And I we have the same interests and da, 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 da. That's not how it is. It's more like, it just all of a sudden feels very natural to say, well, how come you just have a toothbrush and a pair of panties at my place? You might as well move in.
Right.
So, and for, if it's right, the other person without feeling like that is strange or early or late will just go like, you're right. I'll bring them on Friday. And it will feel a bit effortless, right?
Yeah.
Because that's when we are following the way, what we normally call following the heart.
Yeah.
But not in a folly way, like most people would go whimsical, right? Don't follow your heart, use your head. But it's actually using all your experiences. It's just knowing that when I'm in my mental balance, when I'm in my clarity, it will always feel effortless to make that decision. It will hardly feel like a decision. It will just feel like that's what I should do.
Yes. In our spiritual circle, we say that the path becomes clear. It's like all the fog, and then all of a sudden, the path is just so obviously clear. There is no decision. It's just you're in flow. So it sounds like it's also, he must have gotten to a point of recognizing that, yes, it is part of our experience as business people where we can recognize a good deal and a bad deal and timing. And recognizing, as you said, that internal wisdom or intuition, it's that higher knowing that bypasses all of our little rational checks and balances.
Yeah. And very important for people who see themselves as spiritual to understand that when somebody says they have a strong intuition, they're in their head.
Hmm. Explain that. Because we deal a lot with intuition in my world.
Yeah.
And for me, it's quite the opposite. When I have what some would call a strong intuition, the way I feel it is, it's a knowing. It's that exact, like, this is the right path. So it's a knowing, but I use the word intuition. So explain what you mean.
What I mean by that is when somebody, usually when they say they have a strong intuition, it's not that it's so clear. It's that I feel strongly. I have a spider sense about it. That's in that sense. I mean, it's because that feeling is constructed by my thinking because I can't feel without my thinking.
Right.
So an intuition is more like it looks so clear, but it doesn't come with that strong feeling. It doesn't come with that like gung-ho idea, right? It comes more like that simple knowing that you have, if you have kids, when they ask for candy before dinner and it's just like, no, there will be no candy. But it's not like something you get angry about. It's not like something you shout at the kid. It's right. Just do whatever you want. Kick me in the shins. Tell me you hate me and that you don't want me to be your dad anymore. You still don't get candy before dinner because I want you to have nutrition first.
Right? You've had this conversation, haven't you?
Yeah. I think everybody who has kids has it, yeah. Right? Because yeah. They try everything. They're perfect salespeople. So it's understanding that it's an effortlessness to true intuition that we all have because it's a natural. And that's what he said. Einstein said it a bit different. He said that when he has a problem and he gets stuck, he said the first thing he realizes is there is no way of solving a problem from the level of thinking and consciousness that makes it look like a problem.
Right. You've got to start from a whole nother level of consciousness.
Yes. So then he was smart enough to understand that you cannot construct a higher level of wisdom. You cannot go, so what do I do to get there? So he knew that it's not something to add. There's something in the way right now. Mm. I'm stuck in my thinking. Now, he didn't understand what I'm talking about. It was a while ago, right? But he understood in a scientific level that he went and did something else. So I read one of his memoirs where he said he went and rode a motorcycle for a while, you know, a day or two. I thought that was just something they made up in the movies to explain his hair when he took off the helmet or something. But he actually liked riding motorcycles. So when he did, apparently that took enough of his focus to not be able to stay stuck with trying to solve the problem. And he said in the beginning, he couldn't help but go back and see, is it solved? Is it solved? Is it solved? And then he said, well, after a day or so, because he said, I can't keep my focus that long. I think a day is very long for a focus, right? But after a day or so, he forgot about it. And he said, almost the instant he forgot about it, the solution presented itself in such a way and such a perfection that it never had to be altered. Mm. And what he meant by that was also, I can take that to the bank. Like, it's not a fluffy thing. It's every thinker, every human being has had ideas coming to them from the blue, so to speak, right? Out of the blue. Just, I've been struggling where to put this sofa in the new apartment. And all of a sudden, when you stop thinking about it and you're in the shower and you're about to fall asleep or somewhere else where you're not engaged, all of a sudden it's like, oh, it shouldn't even be in that room, right? That should be in that room. It'd be perfect there, right? So it's, and it can be, should we hire this person or not? Should I marry this person or not? It's counterintuitive to most of us to understand that what's in the way is trying to solve it so hard. It's putting it on the mental back burner and realize that the same force that keeps my heart beating, or when I eat a sandwich that knows that I'm going to bring this down into molecules and I'm going to use this for new toenails, right? Whatever is making those decisions, it's got my back. It's not the devil. It's the angel, so to speak, right? That's why we're here. That's why we had millions of years of evolution. Now we're here. It's got our back. It wants what's good for us.
Yes.
But it's like we don't trust that. And then we try to overpower it with intellect. And the biggest problem I think we all have is that the intellect screams and wisdom whispers. Intuition whispers. And that's what I'm saying, that when I talk to people with strong intuitions, they almost feel like their intuition screams at them. And when they say that, I realize, no, you're in your head making judgment.
Hmm.
But if you come to me quite calmly and say, this is what I need to do, that's your intuition. I can tell when you're invested in it, you're in your head. When you know you're fine either way, but this is what I want, you can't be moved. I'm going to be kicking your shins and doing what I want, but I still get no ice cream. So you can tell in a relationship, it's the same thing when somebody's in that place, when they go, are you happy? And what do you mean? Well, I'm not there, so I don't think we should do this. And you try to shout at them and do whatever, but there's a calmness there. It's resolved. It's done.
Yeah.
You know they can't be moved because, but if they start shouting back, it becomes, you know, I've got an in.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a chance because they feel bad enough that they might think, I am the fridge. You know, that just stay with me and this pain will be over, right?
Right.
Make the decision to stay and you'll be feeling better rather than going inside. I don't know if that speaks to the strong part of the intuition. So I think what you meant is like, I can see it very clear and not with a strong feeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the strong feeling is always saying that our perspective is a bit warped. That's what it's saying. It doesn't say you should go down the aisle or you shouldn't go down the aisle. You know, you should go to Paris or not to Paris. It's just saying right now you don't see clear enough to know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it is.
Well, you've said something that I found somewhat controversial.
Yeah.
And that is that this idea that we should learn to meditate to bring the quiet and calm to the mind. You're like, No, you don't need to do that. You don't need to teach meditation. you don't need something to do. So I found that controversial. So tell me, explain more about that.
Well, if you look at kids, you can see that the meditative state that meditation is all after is built into us. It's innate.
Yes.
And we lose it somehow along the way. And when we lose it, it looks like we need to do something to get it back. But if it wasn't lost, then we don't need that. So I'll see if I can explain it by another way, because right now when I go into companies, it's very, very common that they say we need to be in the here and now. It's very common. Like we need people who are here and now. And I asked him, well, we brought in this mindfulness expert, or we did this and we tried these things. And I said, well, the thing is here that it looks like a good idea from that kind of premise. The premise is that it comes and goes, but it's an illusion that it ever goes. So here's the thing. For example, if we go scientific on this, you can never leave the now. You can't, but you can use your thinking in such a persuasive way that you sit in a classroom and the teacher disappears, your classmates disappears, and you don't hear a voice or anything, and you're totally transported to the football field or your home or wherever else you would like to be rather than listening to a boring subject, right? And then everything disappeared. Now, the thing we do inside our head is so convincing that we can swear I'm somewhere else. But if there's a murder committed outside the classroom, you have an alibi because you're there. You can't leave the here and now. But you can, via your thinking, create the illusion that you're somewhere else. Now, if you buy into the illusion, then the question will be, how do I get back? Hmm. How do I get back here? Now, if you see what's actually going on, it becomes, I don't need to do anything except stop that, and I'm here. So it becomes a bit of a thing once we see that this is principle. Principle is true no matter if you believe it or not. So gravity is kind of true whether you believe it or not. So you go up on a high building and you step off the ledge. I don't care how positive you are, you're going to be falling. And I don't care how much you know, if you're Einstein or Sir Isaac Newton and you know everything about gravity, you still fall. The same thing is, it's a principle that we live in the experience and feeling of our thinking, which is the reason you can sit down and meditate one time and feel serene and wonderful and in contact with the entire universe. And the next time you do it, it feels like, kids, shut up. I'm trying to be mindful. And they go like, you're not very mindful, mom. So, but if it was actually the meditation per se, then it would work every time. But since we don't see it that way, we think that, no, I wasn't doing it right. I wasn't doing it the proper way, the right way, or something else. Instead of looking at the fact that there's nothing wrong with meditation. I mean, it's a wonderful thing when you use your intuition to say, I need to sit down and just be calm. But when it becomes a schedule thing, like, I think I need to meditate twice a day to keep my wits about me, or to finally get to the place where it's honed in and worked in and trained in so that I will be there, right? Once we start doing that, then it only becomes like food for an overweight person, or a gin and tonic for an alcoholic, or the running shoes for somebody who goes running and that's their church, right? And how do you know if somebody has a healthy relationship with what they're doing or not? It's a very simple test. It's like a litmus test. And that is, you take it away and see if they have a negative reaction. Now, if they do, they have a problem, right? Then they're addicted. So you hide your partner's running shoes. And if they come walking in and saying, honey, I can't find my running shoes. And you go, I don't know where they are. It's really strange. I would have liked to go running today, but I guess I'll do something else then. Then they're fine. But if they come bursting in going, where the expletive is my shoes? You know, they think that running is their way of using a tool to manage their anxiety, their stress, whatever is coming up. And they don't see at all that it's coming from their thinking. They think that it's coming from the world. And one of the things they can do in the world to get rid of them is running. Or one of the things they can do in the world to get rid of it is meditating. Or one of the things they can do is yoga. Or one of the things they can do is play video games. Or one of the things they can do is check their Facebook feed. Right? As soon as you connect up that there's a doing to the being, you lose the meditative state that you were after in the first place. But when it comes as an intuition, more like another CEO told me, he said, I feel like I'm traveled 500 years from the future into my boardroom now. And I said, how come? Well, now that I understand where feelings come from, I know exactly what she's going to do. My CFO, every time she gets stressed, she's going to be nitpicking every idea. And when she's balanced, she don't do that. She just doesn't do it. And my sales guy, my sales manager, when he gets stressed, he gets pompous, impossible, and does these things. And when he's in balance, he just doesn't do that. So now I get in there and I see the meeting going in the wrong way. Instead of trying to take control of it, I see the mental imbalance. I see that people are not there. And I just go, I don't know about you, but I can't think when I need to pee or something, right? Whatever comes to his mind. And then he walks out, he leaves at 5-10 minutes. He comes back like a good basketball coach who sees that.
Time out.
my players are not, you know, losing their technique. They've practiced for 20 years to make that bank shot, for example. And if they start missing it, it's not that I need to go in and say, hey, keep that right arm close to your body. No, I need to just go time out. Let them use whatever human beings do without even thinking about it to recalibrate, because it wants to be in the balance. They want to lose the illusion. But they don't see it's an illusion. They go like, no, I lost it, coach. I lost it. How can I be a pro? I should stop. Right? Mm-hmm. And this will take years to come back from. And then 2 minutes later, they're fine, right? If you let them see what's going on. So it's saying that once it's so easy to take this correlation and make it a subscription. So there's a correlation with a lot of people that sit by yourself calmly and try to focus on one thing and you will feel better. And since that is a pretty universal thing for most people, it seems like there's also a causation. But we know that's not quite true, because you can sit there and not have that, and you can be in a very, very busy place and feel almost spiritual. So we know that it's coming from somewhere else. So I'm just saying that it's better to look to the source of what's going on. So one of the metaphors I use is the ocean. Like, the ocean can have a lot of waves, right? So when I took my my diver's certificate, we went out on a boat, and I'm I claim that I have a good sense of balance, and that's why I get car sick and seasick and everything, but it might just be me being weak, right? So, but anyway, we were out there on the boat, and it was like an hour out to dive on this wreck. And I was starting to go green in my face from just being nauseous. And I said, I don't know if I can handle this. I got to get off. And he says, we're going to be diving soon. Like that would cheer me up. And I said, no, puke in my mask and drown. I will drown in my own puke. Thank you. Not very positive, you know. So, but then he said, don't worry. Once you're about 3 feet under the surface, it's going to be calm. And I jumped in. It turned out, yeah, wow, it's calm. The waves are only on the surface. So, but when you're in the boat and you're being bounced around by the waves, it's so easy to think that the ocean are the waves and you don't see the depth of it and the calmness that's always there. And another way that I had during this weekend with a client was I haven't been drinking alcohol since 96, not because I had a problem with alcohol, but I just thought, since I'm doing health lectures and everything and talking about it, even though I think it's fine to have a glass of red wine with your dinner, after talking to 250,000 people, you can bet one of them is going to be in that restaurant and saying, ah. So, as a professional thing, I just stopped, right? But I said, I still remember when I went out with friends and I drank too much and I got home and I just felt drunk, which was fine. But then I lay down in my bed and all of a sudden the whole room started swirling. And from the depths of somewhere, I remembered this advice of that if you feel like this, put one leg outside of the bed and put it on the floor to kind of tell the brain that it ain't moving. So I tried that and poof, it stopped. And it was wonderful and I could fall asleep because before that it just was like a merry-go-round. Now, this understanding that I'm talking about and we're talking about is a little bit the same, that if you understand where your experience is coming from, it allows you, even in the midst of a thought storm and emotional turmoil, to understand enough to put a foot on the ground.
Mm-hmm. But that's doing, because what you've previously... That is a doing. That's taking an action.
Well, it's a metaphorical action. It's not a real action. It's the understanding. You here's the difference. Let's see if we can clear that out because it's a very good question. Now, there's one thing to have an action because I want to make the feeling go away. And there's another action that comes after you understand. Okay. So that's like, once you have, if this is your feelings here and you have uncomfortable feelings, there's one way to go where you're doing it to get rid of the feeling. And if you think that circumstances or something in the world has caused it, you will either avoid or try to change that thing. So if it's because you have bad results and feel like a loser, you will work hard and see if you can get good results and feel like a winner. That will take the feelings away. And then once you're there, you're going to go, oh, was that all there is? I still have this feeling, which is very, you know, That's why it can be even more depressing to be really successful. And then you've done that circle enough times, or you think food can do it, or whatever. That's a superstitious way of doing it. But when you understand, you take the other route, which is you go, I know where my feelings come from. And from that informed state, I do action, but I don't do the action to get rid of something. I do it because it makes sense. I do it because that's the thing to do. So it's the difference between tips and advice and techniques where somebody tells you, you seem upset, take a couple of deep breaths and count to 10. Then you want to smack them in the face. But if you, for some reason, have those feelings and you turn to understanding and realize, hey, it's just a thought storm in my head. I know there's nothing I can do. But while I'm waiting, I'm just going to have a couple of breaths, count to 10.
Okay.
As a human being, you are automatically worthy of love and affection, just as you are. The body that carries your essence, spirit, or soul through this life is not you. And since the body isn't really you, it should not be considered a limitation to your self-expression and self-enjoyment. Get your copy of The Orgasm Prescription for Women.
See, that's...
I get the difference. The difference there is in the awareness. It's something we call inspired action. You're taking action not to run away, not to push away, not to suppress, but because you are aware, you're conscious of what's creating the symptoms in your body, for example.
Yeah.
Because previously when you describe you on the boat and you recognize that the waves are causing, you know, these little semicircular canals in the inner ear, it's very practical. It's very real that those waves are making you feel sick, but there's a doing. You had to dive to a certain depth. And once everything calmed down, the inner ear is no longer doing that and you feel better. Just like putting your foot outside the bed tells the brain, okay, we're not moving, and the symptoms go away. So that those are actions. So if you were coaching a basketball player who's standing there at, you know, trying to get this free throw and the crowd's making all this noise, right? Those are the waves of the ocean. It's the, you know, the noise and the whatever. There still is a doing, but I hear now your distinction. Your doing is coming from consciousness, is coming from awareness.
And as actually, it's also the fact of what you said here with the basketball player making a three throw with all the crowd. The crowd's noise is not the waves. By my thinking about the crowd noise is the waves.
Okay.
So that's the difference, because one time you're standing there and you feel psyched, or on my side, or even if they go boo, yeah, do it, I'll make you eat it, right? So then you have a totally
right.
So the waves can never come from the crowd. Mm. The waves that are coming inside of here, but the illusion is that it's coming from there. That's why it can seem like let's do it practical. For example, with the golf player that I coached, he was calling me from Singapore, and he was for the first time in a world event, and the world events have a lot more money, like, you know, $12 million thing. And he had me playing at that level, and he called me from the range because this is how it works nowadays. And for some reason, it's always hard to know if it's 8 hours ahead or in front or wherever. So he called me in the middle of the night almost, right? And he just goes, "Coach, I need to talk." I said, "Okay." I said, "What's going on?" "You don't understand. The world number one is on my left. The world number two is on my right. And I feel about an inch tall."
Yeah.
I said, so what's going on? And he says, "You don't understand. This is a totally different level. And I'm so nervous." I said, "What do you want me to do?" He said, "Well, make me not nervous." I said, "Well, I have some good news and bad news. Which one do you want?" I said, "Give me the good news." "Well, it's not coming from where you think. It's actually coming from where you think." He was a bit confused, of course. So I said, "Let's try this." I said, "Put a ball down on the grass right now," because he said, "I can barely see it. I'm basically losing focus. I don't know what's going on." Right? I said, "Well, that's how it is. Once your body starts shunting all blood to the extremities to be able to fight or flee, it's hard to make other than phobic focuses, right?" So I said, that's fine. But just put a ball there on the thing." And he says, "Okay." I said, "Close your eyes." He says, "Okay. Can you remember when you called me 3 weeks ago after you won in India?" And he goes, "Yeah." He said, "Yeah, can you remember?" And he goes, yeah. "Can you remember 17th hole when you made the birdie?" And he goes, "Yeah." "Can you remember when you chipped in on the last and crowd goes wild?" And he goes, "Yeah." And you can almost hear in his voice, "This is why I'm calling you." Right? So he is all excited after we've gone through this a little while. So I said, "Open up your eyes, look down on the ball and tell me if it's flown away." And he says, "What the hell are you talking about? Of course it's still there." I said, "So you mean it doesn't matter how positive you're thinking, it's still not going to fly away?" And he goes, "Oh, shit." And I said, "Let's do this. Can you think about the worst thing in your life right now?" And of course, once you've gone from bad to good, you don't want to go there. So he goes, "I can't come up with anything." So I said, not even the fact that your girlfriend just moved out on you and emptied the apartment and just left a note because I had some inside information. And he said, do you have to bring that up now? This is not what I need, right? And I said, well, just go there for me. And he goes like, well, that feels really shitty, of course. And I said, yeah. And then you realize that's only thinking. And then I want you to grip the golf club with your left hand like you know how to grip it. And then with your right hand like you know how to grip it. And I want you to aim the club head like you know how to aim. And I want you to put your body in relationship to that with a good balance the way you do it. Then swing and tell me where the ball went. And he comes back and lifts the phone after a while and says, of course it went where I wanted it to go if I do that.
Of course.
So you mean that it doesn't matter how negative you're thinking, you can still hit the ball where you want if you just know what's going on? And he goes, oh, crap. And he said, I think we're done. I said, I think we're done.
Can I go back to sleep now?
Yeah, I can go back to sleep now. And he finished third.
Wow.
And that kind of tournament was a lot more money than finishing first. So he made a couple of million in a couple of weeks, which made me feel underpaid. But the fact was that he didn't need to, what he thought I was doing at first, which I knew I wanted to paint him in that corner, because I knew he had gone through all the regular stuff with the national teams and everything, was that, okay, so right now I'm judging things badly and I feel badly. So now you are helping me to judge things good and take resources out of my past and bring them forward into the now so I can finally perform, right? That's the game he thought we were playing. That's the premise he was playing. I was saying that even if that works, it has an ugly backside. And the ugly backside is that now you're going to think your thinking is even more important next time. Mm-hmm. And what I'm saying is that your thinking isn't important. You're good because you're good. You're not good because you finally got it right between your ears. Just like a wolf is born with everything to be a good wolf, every human is born with everything to be a good human. So doing our best and having fun doing it and being focused on what we need to focus on, that's what should be natural. So the question, if we're not doing it, is not what should I do? It's rather, what am I doing to be in the way of that?
Yeah.
And that's a totally different premise. That's almost like Earth is in the middle. Well, then the sun goes up and down. And where the hell is it when it's dark? Will it come back? Now, Earth is around the sun, and you got the heliocentric worldview, then it's like, why don't you just go to bed? It will be there in the morning, and it's a lot easier to sleep when it's dark. So all the worry goes away, and all the sacrificial daggers go away, and all the killing of virgins and pigs and everything goes away. And that's a doing, of course, but it's a doing because it doesn't make sense anymore. It's not right. A doing of stop doing that and you'll feel better. It's a why would I do it when it's not connected?
Yeah. Well, let's take it into a realm that's even more difficult, because you can speak to a golfer or or a pianist or anyone who's trained, and you can say you're good because you're good. And they could, again, intellectually say, well, yeah, I am good. I've practiced this. I've played this for years and years and years. I am good. Or they could look at their past, whatever. But let's take it to a realm that is even more challenging. And that is, you know, relationships. So what do you say to that person who calls you and says, coach, there's, you know, this hot person to my right and this hot person to my left, and I see somebody that I want to talk to, but I feel like I'm just a loser. What chance do I have that, you know, all anything that comes out of their mouth? How would you counsel that person?
Basically the same way, because here's the fun part of it. When I talk to an athlete, if we go back to that, and I ask them, let's say they're 25, so they're way into, you know, for an athlete, usually into their prime, right? Yeah. And I tell them, if I were to bring you back and have a game, a match, or whatever their sport, right, with your 15-year-old self, who would win? And they go like, I'm beat the shit out of my 15-year-old self. I'm a grown-ass woman or a man right now, right? So, of course I would. Not trained for another 10 years. And they think the game is now, oh, you're reminding me that I'm actually making progress, right? So they're pretty stoked about that, right? Yeah. I'm getting better. I just lost track of how much better I've gotten. That's good. But that's not the game I'm playing. So I look at them, I say, well, if you and your 15-year-old self came out into this tournament, or whatever it is, and you played and you beat the shit out of them, who would have the most joy out of it? And all of a sudden they look at me and go like, I think my 15-year-old self beat the shit out of me when it comes to enjoyment. They would just go like, cool, do you see that guy over there? He's like famous. And they would be like, can you believe we're playing on this course? So they would be, you know. And then I said, but it seems like you had the premise that the better you get, the more fun it is. So how come you had more fun when you were worse? And then they had to start looking into, where is my enjoyment coming from? Is it something I create, or is it something that should be there as the default position for a human? Just like you see when a child starts to walk and they stand up and they fall and they cry, or they make a laugh because it was funny to fall on their bum, right? So, but they keep doing their best and they enjoy it. And the whole process is just, that's the way it should be. It's something in the way otherwise. So once you start seeing that's what's going on, that at every level of competence, you have the availability of confidence and enjoyment. It has nothing to do with the level of your competence. So, but that's what you make up in your head when you see somebody that you can always find somebody who said, well, I'm feeling badly, but see, they have money, so no wonder. Now, but I coached billionaires and they go like, I want to give all my money away because I was the happiest when I didn't have anything. So we know money has nothing to do with it. Because one side is saying, if I had what he had, I'd be happy. And they're saying, if I could just walk the streets like a normal person, not being recognized, and I didn't have the money, and I had to just scrape by, that was the enjoyment, right? So we know it's not coming from there. So when you look at that, you stop going like, you don't have to go up and say, I need to think of myself as hot and having a chance. I just have to realize that the feeling in my stomach is telling me I have too much thinking about this that I'm taking seriously, transporting me with the illusion that I'm not here, I'm not now, and just walk up and go, hi. It's not about being, you know, and saying, telling it like it is, you know, there's a reason you want to know this person, right? Now, if it's like, I just love your energy and I just got happy just by sitting there watching you and I just felt like I needed to go up and say hi, then say that, right? Don't try to be all that smart, you know? Because telling it like it is beats any story you can come up with. Just like seeing the universe as it is in all its awesomeness with all the things that we have no clue about, that feeling of wow from not knowing beats any belief that you make up about bearded guys in the sky or where the universe ends, whatever you feel like you have to fill your ignorance with. And you might get a good feeling from that. You might get a wow feeling from making up those beliefs, but it doesn't hold a candle to the truth of the awesomeness of not knowing. The awesomeness of going, wow, that's what true research is about. There's not a scientist out there who researches what's already known. They try to look into what don't we know. They get excited when their theory crumbles. They go like, that means we might have to just change quantum theory completely. They get excited. They don't go like, oh shit, I was wrong. They go like, wow. So, and you can't, that's what's our default system. And when you see a person and you like them, go and say hi. If they can't even be civil and go like, loser, why are you even approaching me? Isn't that better to know now than after 5 years of marriage?
Yeah.
Right? So if they can't even be nice to somebody who's nice, you know they're too much in their head then, right? And and sometimes it just means they were in their head at that time. And then you can say hi another time and they might be balanced and back, and at least they would be like, I'm really flattered. And then you go, so would you like to go out? And they go, no, I'm really flattered, but no. Or they might go, yeah, I'm really flattered, and yes. Yeah. But it's not such a big deal. The big deal is made up in our head. And once you see it's made up in your head, and you don't have to play the devil and the angel game and say, I'm so insecure, I want to feel really secure, instead of saying, wow, I have no idea how this will go. I'll just go up and say hi. And realizing whatever they do cannot make you feel. Hmm. Only your thinking about that can make you feel. And then it doesn't require as much courage, because you only need courage when you're afraid. And you're only afraid when you don't understand. That's why we have all these problems between races and women and men. And whenever we don't understand, we feel threatened by our thinking. We think we feel threatened by whatever is out there, but we feel threatened about that in an evolutionary sense. It's been good for human beings to think that it's bad if we don't know. Mm-hmm. So every old map, as soon as we have a white area on that map, it would be filled with sea monsters and stuff. Don't go there. Right? We don't say there's treasure. No, we say that stay away. We don't know what it is. So it's probably bad.
Yeah.
And that's the same as when you go picking mushrooms in the forests. You don't know exactly what that mushroom is. Don't eat it. Don't touch it. Don't pick it. Right? That has served us well. That's why we're here. But it doesn't quite serve as well when we go into our heads. Mm. Because in here, it doesn't work like the real world. Now, if I don't like my computer for some reason, I think my bad feelings come from the computer, I have to throw it out, cover it over, burn it up, or leave the room so I cannot be in the presence of it, and then I can be okay. Now, if I understand it's my thinking about the computer, now that changes more of a quantum level. That means that anytime I don't think it, it's not like I'm in denial. It actually doesn't exist for me when I don't think it. Mm-hmm. So that's a big question comes up with my clients. They go like, well, if I don't think about all the problems I have right now when I'm going to compete, am I not living in denial because I have real problems? And I said, well, to be honest, you don't know how real those problems are, because worried people see problems everywhere and think they have to solve the problems to get out of worry. Hmm. But once you understand how it works, you see worried thinking taken seriously, and you independently get out of the thinking and realize, oh, most of my problems disappeared. And what's left is some things I might need to do and some things I don't need to do. And that was it. So it turns out that the experience is all in our heads, and we need to independently be able to get out of that state of mind. Mm. But because we're in the thought virus of the old culture, we think, no, I have real problems and I need to solve those problems before I can get out of worry.
Yeah.
And the other way around, the problems has nothing to do with your worry. Your thinking has everything to do with it. You have insecure thinking. You're not an insecure person. You have temporary insecure thinking. You're taking it seriously. And when you do, you see problems everywhere.
Yeah. Well, let's take this into, as we're getting close on time, something that you and I talked about last year, which is a real challenge for people when you start saying that, what? I'm just having insecure thinking. But what happens? What would you say to people who have experienced some sort of trauma, whether that's abuse or violence, even people who've just witnessed violence, who are now in their present lives feeling like, you know, what you're saying is just not, you know, you're not understanding how
I'm this real thing. Yeah. Well, I've been, I don't know if you call it fortunate or unfortunate to meet a lot of these people. I mean, everything from violent rape to domestic problems to a couple that came to me, and their 17-year-old son has hung himself in the living room without a note, or you know, the stuff of life that happens and we wish nobody should go through. And it goes back to the same place, because once we see that even that is waves, I mean, they are waves, not the thing. not the thing. It's very real. It has very real consequences, right? You drive your car off the road and there happens to be something hard and solid that you hit. It's going to have real world, you know, that's nothing to do with that. But your experience of the whole thing still comes from your thinking. Mm-hmm. That's why 10 people walk into an elevator. The elevator goes like that. 9 people walk out and go, whoa, what was that? 1 person walks out and can never ride an elevator again. Now, that one person will say the elevator cost it. Well, we know the elevator can't have cost it because then there would be 10 people walking out with a phobia of elevators. So once we start looking to the principal, we realize what was it that they were doing? What did they put for waves in the way of the ocean? Mm-hmm. And then you realize you follow that and you come back to their thinking again. And once you see that the past can never, ever hurt you because it's actually over, and the only way you can have an experience of the past is by bringing memories, which is thinking, into the present moment and experiencing them like in that classroom, like, no, I'm not here, I'm there, in the way that I'm no longer now, I'm in the past, re-experiencing that thing. And if it weren't for the thing, I wouldn't have the feeling. No, if it weren't for the thinking, you wouldn't have the feeling. That's how it is. That's why the other times of the day, you are not traumatized. And then you're walking on the street, whatever, and you have a thought storm, and boom, it feels like the past is sitting there shooting feelings to you. And I haven't met anybody who's been traumatized in the way that they had a bad experience and it now affects them, who does not make that innocent. And I repeat innocent, because it's not something we do consciously or anything, but that innocent misunderstanding of that the past could somehow shoot feelings at us. But it's the thinking in this present moment that is giving us those feelings. And once you realize that, you don't have to go back in the past and make it not be.
Right.
Like the couple who lost their son. When I started that session, I don't know why that came to me. That's an intuition. But when they sat down, normally I would ask, what can I do for you? What do you see as the problem and so forth? You know, just to start off and see where they are. But here I just start off by looking at the mother. And I said, you do realize I cannot make your son return from the dead. Hmm. And she said, with a very easy face, almost a little smile, no, of course you can. I understand that. So I looked at her again and said, you do realize that I cannot make your son rise from the dead. And she looks at me like, why are we here? This guy is a bit daft, right? He's a bit slow. He just said that. So I said, yeah, I understand that. And I said it the third time, you do realize I cannot make your son rise from the dead. And then she broke down crying. Because honestly, when walking into any therapist, in their mind, the feelings they're having is coming from the fact of him not being there.
Right.
Which means that the only solution would be him being there again. Yeah. Which means that why are we even talking? Unless you can make my son come back from the dead, it's just not going to help. So I had to throw that out of the water. And it wasn't until she accepted that she had that premise on her mind. I said, so let's talk about what we can do and what we can understand about this. And then we had a wonderful deep talk about where her emotions are coming from. And the thing was that a week later when we met, she said it wasn't that she had been crying less, because she was still crying most of the time, but she said the crying had an easier feel to it. Hmm. And she saw more of the good times, not the times she would not be able to have that she made up in her mind about, oh, now he would be graduating and now he would be getting married and now he would be, and he was made. And she would see those events that haven't even happened. Yeah. Those were the events that caused her pain.
Right.
Not. And I said, you can think that and you might play that out for your own fancy, just like Einstein had thought experiments. As long as you realize you're having thinking and playing a movie in your head, and that the feeling will always guide you right. So if you have an uncomfortable feeling, it's like touching the plate and says, don't go there. because now you're treading water with the illusion might become so real you get lost.
Yeah.
I want to warn you to take your hand off the plate. And in this case, taking the hand off the plate is being able to not take that line of thinking seriously.
Mm.
And that just helped her. And the one thing that her, the dad, he was mostly sitting there silent, but I could tell as a man, he was probably hurting more. Right? He should have protected. He should have whatever.
Yeah.
But what he said was, he hadn't even talked. Right? I talked to her because I could tell that he was right, but he was listening. So I was talking to him while, but he got it. So after about 3 weeks, he said, thank you. I said, well, what are you thanking me for? He said, well, we have a younger daughter. I said, okay. So I've been almost punishing her for not being dead. Right? And now I'm with her again.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. And that's what happens from understanding the principle of living in the experience of our thinking, that we work as a projector and not a camera.
Yeah.
And once you start seeing where your feelings come from, it changes everything. Just like when you see that the sun isn't gone just because it's dark. I mean, you almost want to talk to Trump about this. Global warming is not fake because you're cold. Right? So that would be like, no, you know, the global threat of starvation is gone because I just ate.
Right.
I don't see the problem. I'm full. This is the same thing. You start seeing that it makes a big, big difference when you see that, hey, my feelings are not coming from where I thought they were coming from. They're actually coming from where I think.
Yeah.
And then you can actually go a little bit deeper, and the deeper in the ocean here, because once you use a metaphor, it's so easy to go into the real world and say, so you mean it's an action? But in here, it doesn't exist. It's not an action. It's more like the deeper is, so where does your thinking come from? And usually a person who starts even reflecting on that goes to that deeper place. And yeah, they notice that the waves are not there anymore. Yeah, no, because there's an infinite space. And we don't have to make up a word for it. You don't have to call it universal intelligence or God or anything. We can just say there is something there. But you don't have to fill your ignorance with belief and think that that's better. You can just go, I have no idea. Wow. I have no idea what it is. But I know that when I touch that space, I'm okay no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I touch that space, something happens. Something. I drop below the surface of the waves and realize it was an illusion that I was bounced around.
Mm, beautiful. Yeah. Wonderful, wonderful way to close. Wonderful insights.
I hope that it cleared something up for somebody, but I know it did for me, so I'm good.
Yeah, I'm like, you know what? I'm good too. I've kind of been around the spectrum here. And I'm good. I'm back in that good feeling space, whatever you call it. Well, Anders, I enjoy speaking with you. Every time we get together, it's like we go into these long, deep conversations, and I do always get something from it. So I'm really pleased that we can share this with a wider audience. And as you and I will be working on things and planning to get together to help other people in a group setting, you know, with bringing you here to the Riviera and Monaco. But people right now can actually tap into your wisdom on an ongoing basis by checking into your life vision. So tell us a little bit about your monthly newsletter in English, and you know, you also do it weekly.
I do it weekly in Swedish because my main audience here is up in Scandinavia, and the Norwegians and Danish people have more Swedish TV, so they understand Swedish. But most of them. But I also do it in English, but then I do it once a month because otherwise it's too much of a workload to live like that. But in that, compared to a lot of newsletters, I spend a whole day on something like this, sharing whatever is the best I have to share in that letter. And I'll get a lot of feedback where they at least you know, 50 people every week go like, that was what I needed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's cool. But I just try to share what I see and what's principle based true, like gravitational forces where you see it.
Right.
And it's amazing for me as a parent, how much it does for me as a parent when my kids are acting up and I get that burning sensation in my stomach and I realize that it's coming from me and not from them. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as you do that, it seems silly to take it out on them.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Then it looks like I need to calm down. Right? and sometimes that just, if I'm in a bad place, it might mean I just go like, I hand the kid over to my wife and say, I can't be here right now. And I remove myself, because sometimes it's as valuable to not do something damaging as to do something great.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's one side of this too. So usually I just give up on that and say, I wish I could be more loving in that situation next time. But I don't do what I did before, which would be write up 10 different scenarios of what I would like to do if I got it again.
Yeah.
Because I know that's trying to put it on there, and then it's trying to fake it till you make it, rather than actually coming from a warm space. And now I see that I do that, and next time I can actually treat them with the feeling I have when I watch them sleep.
Yeah.
And if you treat your children with the feeling you have when you watch them sleep, you don't need a parenting book. Hmm. And if you've lost that feeling because you're up in your head and you think it's coming from the kid and they need to change, or you cannot feel the way you should be feeling or whatever, it doesn't matter how many books you've read.
Yeah.
And that's the thing to see, that this is something for real.
Right.
Where most of the books I read is like a menu. But if you bite into a menu, it tastes like paper.
Right.
You kind of want the food. And hopefully somebody got some food out of this.
Yeah.
That's at least that was my intention. That was my intention, that you don't get a menu of things to do. You got some food to eat.
Absolutely. Well, to continue this buffet of consciousness raising peak performance insights, you can visit lifevision.se and you can sign up for Anders' newsletter there completely free and really soak up the wisdom. I love how you include, you have a reading list suggesting certain books that people can actually explore, things that you personally have read and pored over. So I just want to thank you again for really allowing us to pick your brain and go deep and spend this time together. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. So until next time, I would invite you to just be aware of the beautiful divine being that you are, with this consciousness, this awareness, this ability that you have to continue to make life this fabulous adventure. And that's it for now. So until next time, I'll see you later. Bye.
To boost your self-confidence and overall life mastery, visit us online at andreapennington.com. You'll access the free ebooks, training programs, and masterclasses hosted by Dr. Andrea Pennington and her guests. Connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/Dr. Andrea Pennington.